This is the Apologetics Canada podcast. This is Steve Kim, your host, and I have Andy Steiger and John Morrison here with me today as usual.
Yo.
Hello there, everyone.
So, John, how's married life?
Ah, yes. Thank you for asking, Steve. I quite enjoy it.
So, now, hold on a second. I think it's important that we let everybody know that I officiated the wedding of John and Haley, and yeah, that's all I really had to say there, John.
So for the record, it's more important, according to Andy, it's more important that he officiated the wedding than that I got married. That's leadership for you right there. Thank you, Andy. I do believe it's important to announce that. He did a great job.
I had way too much fun.
He's not only a gifted apologist, but he's a heck of a reverend, too. So, Steve, have we talked about Little Maya yet on the podcast?
No, we'll get there. First, I think we need to talk about married life. How has it been being a married man? You guys went down to the Oregon coast to celebrate?
Yeah, lovely. Very lovely time on the Oregon coast. We went to Cannon Beach, specifically. That's the kind of information you give out after the fact.
Yes, right? It is.
I love it. It's been a lot of fun. I would recommend marriage to all of our listeners out there. I think that's something only married people say.
Yeah.
That more just frustrates single people. But having been single for a long time, I can actually now say, yeah, actually it is very good. When it's the right person, at the right time.
Well, how old are you? Like 34?
34, no, not that old, but we don't...
If only you could see the disgust on John's face when
34.
I said that.
Who's 34?
I'm 34,
old,
John.
I know, old people are 34.
Are you 33?
I'm 33.
Oh. I guess I'm the baby of Apologetics Canada. Andy is still the thumbs of Apologetics
Canada.
Yes, I
am. Well, how old are you, John?
A true gentleman apologist never gives out his age. Thank you for asking, though.
So, John, have you and Haley had your first fight yet now as a married couple?
Yeah, we can't seem to agree over some of the premises of the kalam.
I hope that you won that argument.
Well, I did. You know, it's the key is if anything begins to exist, then it must have a first cause. And so we kind of got confused over that. And so, yeah.
I'm sure you did.
I won a lot of arguments. By the way, have you ever noticed that Jesus never got married, probably for that reason? If there's ever a fight in a marriage and you're, one of you is the son of God and cannot sin, who's going to be wrong every single time?
Yeah, it wouldn't make you feel very good about yourself,
would it? No. I mean, Jesus would be just like, hey, I dropped the God card every single time. Yeah. The other person's in tears.
You sinned again.
Yeah. It just wouldn't go well. So I think it's best that Jesus remained a bachelor.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah. Glad
you brought that up.
Da Vinci Code, eat your heart out. There's a little freebie apologetic nugget right there.
Yeah, what about you, Steve? Man, you got a baby.
Yeah,
in the house.
It's awesome having a baby. Not so awesome for my sleep schedule, but she's just over 4 weeks now, and she's already got me wrapped around her little finger.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm loving it. So it's all good.
Boy.
Mm-hmm. She's got my eyes and my wife's ears, because mine are attached.
Nice. I've noticed that attached. You don't have much of an earlobe, Steve.
No, I don't. Yeah, I wouldn't do very well with those plugs, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If I am the thumbs of apologetics,
I'm the ears. Yes.
We need someone to be the earlobes, though. Apparently,
I'm not quite sure what you are yet, John.
Yeah, and did you notice,
I'm a lot of things, Andy.
And did you notice that my ears are like kind of facing forward like this?
Mm-hmm.
It's brutal in the wintertime. Maximum wind resistance. I'm glad I didn't pass that on to my child.
Yes.
That would be difficult for our listeners to be able to get a picture of Steve, so you could check our website, apologeticscanada.com, for a full picture of Steve Kim's ears.
Nice.
But Maya's beautiful.
Yes, she is. Beautiful. She's a cutie, man.
We were there visiting at the hospital. And
she's
Facebook
my kid,
pictures,
but I think she's the most gorgeous girl in the world, and that's a completely neutral and unbiased statement.
Of course it is. Of course it is. Yeah, man, you're going to have your hands full, buddy.
Yeah, I already do. I'm just looking forward to spending lots of time with her and see where life takes us from here.
Yeah, man, talking about spending lots of time with your kids, I had just an awesome weekend with my boys. I have a 4-year-old and a 6-year-old. Took them caving this weekend. Mm. Oh, man, it was just awesome. They loved it. They loved it. In fact, my youngest, my four-year-old, we got done going through this cave, and it was, like, tight. And he got through the end, and he goes, Dad, he goes, I want to go back through the other way. And I'm just like, okay.
Wow.
So then we went back through again.
Went back.
Yeah, man, the kid is just fearless.
Wow. So, Did you get any sermon illustrations out of it?
Not yet, but I'm working on it. You know me.
Andy minds his children for great sermon illustrations. And
I do. Actually, I'll give you one that was quite funny and remind our listeners that we have now talked about marriage and children, and they are both good. No, the other day, my son was talking with the lead pastor here at Northview. It was quite amusing. They were, you know, talking back and forth, and at which point my son stopped Jeff and said, Jeff, you said a bad word. And Jeff was looking at him like, what? I did? And I was thinking the same thing because I didn't hear anything. And he goes, yeah. My four-year-old looks at him and goes, you said holy cow. And he goes, cows aren't holy. God is. And it's the first time I've ever seen – yeah, it's the first time I've ever seen Jeff speechless. And I was killing myself laughing. At any rate.
It's very good. Well awesome. Done. Well done, William.
Yes.
Well, let's talk a little bit about religion.
Yeah.
As all of our listeners know, we're a Christian group. We love our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. But also, it's true that there are lots of other religions in the world. You know, there's Hinduism, Buddhism. If you count Confucianism as a religion, you can, you know, there's another one. And
Islam, Spiritism. Yeah. The list is long, Baha'i. I mean, you can go on and on.
On and on. So what gives us any assurance that our view is right, or are they all equally valid?
Well, and I mean, and that's the question we often hear, isn't it? You know, I can't tell you the number of times I'll hear people tell me, you know, don't all religions lead to God? And to me, I think it's a fascinating question that we ask. Let's just start with that question. Do all religions lead to God? I think a lot of people don't realize that their worldview is so ingrained into them, particularly a Judeo-Christian worldview, that it affects the questions that we ask. And specifically, I mean, asking a question like, do all religions lead to God, flows out of a worldview because it assumes two things. It assumes that God exists, and it assumes that you can reach this God. But the reality is that's just not the case. If you study the world's religions, you'll find out that you've made two wrong assumptions. Take, for example, Buddhism. Buddhism doesn't, strictly speaking, Buddhism doesn't teach that God exists, let alone that you can reach God. Islam teaches that God exists, but not that you can reach God. Like a lot of people, you know, find that surprising to find out that, say, Buddhism, for example, the chief end of Buddhism is nirvana, which the etymology of that word literally means to snuff or to blow out. It means to cease to exist. Islam, the chief aim of Islam is to submit to God and to do good things in hope that God will or Allah will have mercy on you and that you can make it to an earth paradise full of earthly pleasures. But again, not that you will ever come to know God. That is a Judeo-Christian worldview. And in fact, I have yet to come across a religion that believes that God exists and you can know that God personally other than Christianity. Mm-hmm. Even Judaism would be your closest. And in Judaism, it's going to say that God exists and you can know God at some level, but not to the level that God reveals himself in the person of Jesus Christ, this personally know God.
And it's good you bring up Jesus too, because that's a pretty fundamental point in certainly in Christianity that people don't realize, like when the idea do all religions lead to God kind of takes a smorgasbord of things in all religions and kind of joins them to say, look, actually the all religions are kind of saying the same thing, but when you actually do the investigative work, they say a lot of different things at a fundamental level. Take Christianity with how we view Jesus. We believe that Jesus is the Son of God, that Jesus alone can pay for our sins. Jesus said, I am the only way to the Father. You can't get to the Father except through me. And other religions would look at Jesus and say, you know, he's not God. He's not the only way to God. And so the Jews would say that he's not the Messiah. Islam would say he's a prophet who never actually died on the cross. And maybe other religions would say he was a decent teacher. Some of the things that he said were okay, but Jesus would never let us reduce him to only a teacher. So those are huge differences about Christianity's founder and the cornerstone of the Christian faith. Not all religions have any kind of agreement about what to do with Jesus.
And I guess that's really where it all comes down to, doesn't it? Is people are looking for agreement, right? When they ask the questions that they're asking and they make the assumptions that they're making, I think the base of what they're getting at is, well, all religions are true, right? Or they want to know at least, or they'll postulate that all religions are true.
Well, what if I made up a religion, Andy? Could that be true as well?
See, now, what John's doing here is something he loves to do to me as well. He'll read stuff that I've written or what I've preached on in the past, and then he'll quote me to myself.
I just picture on the thing for a minute, that guy with the funny hair and the face, and then he gets lumped into the picture. I think that was a brilliant point. So,
thank you.
I quote you as a compliment.
Appreciate
and
that.
Lobbing a softball over your way.
Because that is the truth. I mean, how illogical is that, you know, okay, then if I just make up a religion, does it suddenly become true? And obviously it doesn't. But where the real rub comes in is I've already given two illustrations of religions that contradict each other. Buddhism doesn't believe in God. Islam does. Can they both be right? You know, can God both exist and not exist at the same time? And obviously we realize that not all religions can be true. In fact, all the world's religions can be false. That's logically possible. Or one of them can be true, but it's not even logically possible that they all can be true, specifically because they contradict one another.
I once heard Craig Hazen say this, you know, when considering all religions, you're best to start with Christianity because it's actually falsifiable. So you can test Christianity to see if it's right. And so I like Andy's point about, you know, saying maybe no religions are right or maybe only one is. So who do you start with? Well, let's try Christianity because Christianity is based on a historic event. Paul will say that, you know, if Jesus is not alive, if the dead are not raised, then all of our faith is futile. We're the most pitied of all men. So really it hangs on that one thread, this historic event. The resurrection. You disprove the resurrection, you disprove Christianity.
Well, and I think we can push it one step further even, because I love where you're going with that, and that's one of the things that I love about Christianity is that it's testable. You can prove it to be false. Yeah, that means you can also prove it to be true. Either Jesus is who he claimed to be or not. But let's take Jesus for a second. And what are Christians saying about Jesus? We're saying that he is God in the flesh. That it is God, that he is God's revelation to man. Now, this is significant because a lot of people talk about this idea of, you know, that back to that question we first asked, do all religions lead to God? And that's a funny thought if you think about it, that religion can reach God. I mean, God would first need to even want to be reached if you're ever going to reach God. If God doesn't want to be reached, you're not going to reach God. I mean, the thought that the created could ever reach the creator or the imperfect could reach the perfect is ridiculous. It is. But then it raises the question then, okay, then if God does want to be reached, well, then how has he made that possible? See, then Christianity steps in and says something I think is quite profound. Christianity's answer to the question, do all religions lead to God, is no, they don't, and we've already seen that. But Christianity goes further than that and says that no religion leads to God, that in fact, God reached you. And the word gospel means good news, and that is the good news.
Mm-hmm.
The good news is that God reached you in the person of Jesus Christ and has made a way that you can come into a relationship with God.
Yeah. So maybe summarizing, world religions are about what you must do to get to God, an attempt to do these things or practice these, sacrifice this or attend this. But Christianity is good news of what God did for you. So it's something that's been done on our behalf, and that's what makes it good news.
Yep.
It's what we can receive being done for us, not what we need to do. Because if we had to do stuff, it wouldn't be such good news. It would just be, here's a list.
Yeah.
I had a close friend of mine challenge me once saying, well, you believe Christianity because you don't really know all of these other religions. Like, you don't really know Buddhism really that well. You don't know Islam that well. You don't know Hinduism that well and things like that. I thought that was interesting because I thought the Christians rejected these other religions because precisely because they know these religions too well. For example, we know that in Buddhism, like you said, strictly speaking, Buddhists don't believe in the existence of a soul or that there is a personal God that can be reached. Islam doesn't even think that Jesus is the Son of God and that he never really died. And it was really, what was it, Judas that was on the cross that was made to look like Jesus. And so people thought Jesus was crucified, but he wasn't. So there are some really like fundamental differences there that we are aware of, and on these bases we can reject these other religions if we claim that Christianity is true. And I always kind of come back to this one quote that Ravi Zacharias gives. He's fond of saying that people often say that all religions are fundamentally the same, but only superficially different. But he says, actually, the reverse is true. All religions are fundamentally different and only superficially the same. Mm-hmm. Because at the core, you know, I mean, even something as fundamental as the existence of God, mm-hmm. we disagree. Buddhists don't believe in it. Christians believe in the Trinitarian God. Muslims believe in the Unitarian God. And these have huge implications. And so I think as much as in today's culture we want to react to the way we have acted in the past, where, you know, we kind of put our own worldview on the pedestal and then just kind of talk down all other religions like Hinduism or Buddhism, what have you. And we react to that in today's generation, and we want to affirm that all religions are equal. Mm-hmm. That's, if you want to do that, you do that at the expense of reason.
Mm-hmm. Right. Or some people will say, oh, okay, Steve, there's a way that we can get out of, you know, the expense of reason, if you will. And what they'll say is sure, they'll agree that if they're contradictory, that they can't all be true. But they'll say, well, what if they only appear to be contradictory? What if in actuality they're all speaking of a unified reality? Mm-hmm. And so often then we're told of the parable of the blind man and the elephant, which if you've never heard that parable before, it's quoted quite often. It goes simply like this. Three blind men approach an elephant and begin to touch the elephant to describe what it is. Approach an elephant and they touch different aspects of the elephant. One touches the trunk, describes it as a palm tree. Another touches the tail, describes it as a rope. And another blind man touches its ear and describes it as a fan. And so then we're supposed to stand back and say, oh, I get it. Each religion is like a blind man, and they're feeling a different aspect, describing a different aspect of a unified reality from their unique perspective. And upon further investigation, though, of giving, you know, just give that parable a little bit of thought, and you'll realize that it's actually proving the very point that it's trying to not be proving or trying to disprove. It's proven the idea that there exists a truth, mm-hmm. namely that the truth in this case is that there's an elephant. Mm-hmm. And what also it's describing is that the three blind men were wrong. They described reality incorrectly. And so fundamentally, what are we seeking to do? We're attempting to understand truth or the way reality really is. How do we correctly perceive reality? And from what the parable tells us is if you want to know reality, well, then you need to have the narrator or storyteller's perspective. You need to be able to see reality. That's the whole problem with religions trying to reach God, is you're talking about the blind leading the blind. You need somebody with sight, somebody who sees the truth that can tell it to you. And I mean, for me, this brings me courage when I read, you know, like John chapter 14, in which Jesus says, I am the way. You know, not that I found the way, I am the way. And Jesus says, I am life. Not that life has been given to me, but I am life. And then he says, I am truth. Not that I learned truth, but I am truth. And this really separates Jesus from every other religious leader. Jesus spoke with the narrator or storyteller's perspective. He spoke as one who saw reality correctly. He spoke as the author, God. That truly makes him unique. And of anything, it makes him somebody you should be listening to. I mean, that's obviously the perspective we want to hear, is the storyteller's perspective.
And I think once we realize it about that other character in the story, you can kind of see that the person who wants all religions to lead to God is actually claiming to be the storyteller themselves.
That's right. Anytime you make any claim, you're making a truth claim. You can't get away from it. Even the guy who says, oh, I don't even think there is truth, or says, there is no truth. Even that guy is making a truth claim. Specifically, he thinks it's true that there is no truth. You quite literally can't get away from it.
So we joked about the person making up a new religion, but actually the person telling the story of the elephant is making up a new religion.
That's right.
And I remember actually, it comes to mind, this story. This lady was telling me about, she was at a yoga retreat or some kind of spiritual new age kind of gig. And there was a room that had 8 doors, she said. And they all represented all the major world religions. And people would come through different doors, but they all ended up in the same room. And she said that, and the room was full of light. There was light coming in from all sorts of windows. And she said, the theme of every world religion is light. And that's why when everybody comes in through different doors, sure enough, they all end up in the same room. Therefore, all the world religions must be, you know, all equal their way, people's way to God. And I said, was there just 8 doors? And she said, yeah. And then she named off some of the religions that the doors represent. And I said, well, do you think there should have been a 9th door? And she's like, well, why? And I said, well, what about this new religion that this retreat center is clearly trying to put forward? I said, because the idea that all 8 doors would lead to one way is actually just really evidence of a 9th door, this new kind of religion that is being put forward. So I thought that was pretty clever of me to think, well, you actually should have installed a 9th one to support the religion of this retreat center. Because if you ask any of those religious leaders, you know, the imam, the rabbi, the pastor, the priest, and whoever else it would be, they would probably say, there's no way we all lead to the same place. We're fundamentally different. Mm-hmm. And so unless you bring together bring forward a new religion, then there's no way that you would even be allowed to come through one of those doors.
Yeah, this whole idea of this relativism, all religions have their own truth and they're all relative to each other, and that alone is an absolute statement. And so you can't – it's like saying all English sentences are made up of 3 words. It's a self-defeating statement. I mean, that statement doesn't pass its own test. So saying, you know, there is no such thing as truth, well, you just made a truth claim. It's the same idea. You might be wondering, well, how do we know that Christianity is true? We haven't really addressed that yet. All that we talked about today just kind of goes on the assumption that Christianity is true. And we have our reasons for that, namely the resurrection, among other things.
Well, can I just pause on you real quick there? Because one of the thoughts that just flows naturally from what we're talking about, mm-hmm, is that Jesus, first of all, said that he was telling the truth, right? And that he was truth. And obviously then he's telling the truth and he's describing reality his description of reality being a author or narrator's perspective would be the true reality. So the question simply becomes then, was Jesus telling the truth? Mm-hmm. And one of the questions that I've often asked on top of that is that if Jesus is claiming to be the narrator, he's claiming to see reality the way it truly is, well, then what was Jesus' perspective? Like, what did Jesus see? Or one way you could ask this is, what was Jesus' worldview? Mm-hmm. And the worldview that he described was a world ravaged by the effects of sin and evil. Mm-hmm. And then it jumps into the whole resurrection, because you can see this progression in the gospel where God comes to man, makes himself known to man, but more than just making himself known, He's seeking to deal with sin. He's seeking to deal with evil. Because one of the things that, let me back up a little bit. I think a lot of people don't appreciate sometimes in apologetics is that what we're seeking to do is do more than just answer people's questions, mm-hmm. right? This isn't a ministry of answering your questions. This is a ministry of seeking to help you to understand the gospel and that the gospel answers your questions and the right. gospel is coherently intermixed into the gospel, period. And in fact, it's one of the reasons why I love the Thinking Series is because what we're doing is we're taking the gospel and we're threading it through the top five questions that people ask. And I think that people need to understand that this is more than just, hey, let's just look at this question. When we, as Christians, when we come at this thing, we're saying, no, look, this is all-encompassing. This gospel makes sense of this thing in whole. And so I think it's interesting, Steve, that where do we go next with this is to the resurrection. Mm-hmm. It's like one question will naturally lead to the next. And once you start looking at Jesus and the claims he made and the view of the world that he described, you naturally come to this place where you say, okay, is that true? You know, mm-hmm. is the view he described accurate? Do I see what he saw? Mm-hmm. And secondly, did he deal with it? Did he deal with the problem? And was he who he claimed to be? Mm-hmm. You know, and everything kind of comes to this climax with the resurrection.
Yeah, so just keep your eyes open for future podcast episodes because we will come back to these questions and talk about, well, is what Jesus said really true? Or, you know, did the resurrection actually happen? Was evil defeated? And all of these other questions. So
maybe that's what we should do next, you know, is talk on the resurrection.
Yeah, mm-hmm. We'll do that.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that wraps up this week's episode. Thanks for joining us. The Apologetics Canada podcast has been the Ministry of Apologetics Canada. See you next week.